for SK to pick it up here. Trying to walk through the smoke, but it's just not going to happen. SK Gaming, second major championship in a row. They are your winners.
And despite Fnatic's best efforts, it goes the distance. It goes all three maps. And we have our champions, the best team in the world, Ninjas in Pajamas.
Red touching the bomb, already going to peak. Holding it now, and there is it. It's just out of Flamey. It's not going to happen. Astralis have won the face at London Major.
No time. He just has to watch that clock tick down. This is it. Norby have taken the major.
Let's jump to the other quarterfinal at the opposite end of the bracket. Let's do 2014 Virtus Pro. The famous, the birth of the plow, Bialy Snacks added into that roster. Versus 2015 Fnatic, the CT Dominators, another great duo that we'll obviously get to talk about and maybe even do a Swedish on Swedish comparison with our fallen NIP Streak team. This is an interesting one, guys, because this is a matchup because they're so close together in time. They did actually play each other a number of times. And the one that immediately leapt out to me, because I was there to witness it in person, was the VP Fnatic match in Cologne.
2015 Cologne.
Yes, which had all of that. It was just incredible anecdotal stuff. So for those that, you know, I'll just give everyone the broad strokes and then it's open to the floor. That was ESL 1 Cologne. By the way, that was when Cologne also really emerged as like, holy yes. Shit, it's not a fluke. This is a tournament as good as a major. The crowd's amazing. The environment, the team's amazing.
That was the first time in the Lexus.
Yes, exactly. That was when we knew. This was a real crucible for the best teams. And overall, in terms of the maps, like you know, like Virtus Pro, you know, take the Mirage and Fnatic took Cobblestone relatively easily. The interesting bit was the Inferno in the middle, which really showed Fnatic's metal, in my opinion, because Virtus Pro certainly looked like they could have pulled away with that one. So it was a 2-1 to Fnatic, but that doesn't tell the full story. Obviously, you have the famous Pronax timeout, you know, where when they were losing, they took that timeout and they were just able to pull away on Inferno and win. You had the Flusher insane drop-down moment, if I remember right, where wasn't that when he did the thing where he dropped off short and he murked somebody and it was like, it was a mega play. You obviously as well, all of the booing afterwards, strong Polish fan contingent out there to support Virtus Pro. And they were booing Olaf doing a post-match interview. And Taz came out and said, no, don't boo. These are great guys. Like, support them. Don't do that. Just an incredible moment in history that I think sets the table for debating the merits of these two teams.
By the way, one thing you brought up there that is a very unique quality about this Fnatic squad, though, that I think deserves to be highlighted is exactly, I know we briefly touched on it before, but it's very rare. Everyone now, it's only unpopular people. Like I do this, but I do it knowing what I'm doing. I just know I can't be the most popular person. So obviously I lean into like, well, I'm sort of like the villain or like and fucking anti-hero, aren't I? The difference was they were forced, these Fnatic players, because of the whole Olaf boost thing and people thinking Flush and cheated. Yeah. They were forced into this role where the premise was you will either just be hated or you could be a villain. And what I always thought was awesome was that especially the Flushers and JWs of the world, they just lent right into I'm the villain. And that's what's crazy. Think about this time period. Remember, Cologne is always in July of every year. Remember, guys, the fucking Olaf boost was like November the previous year. This is like 7 months later, and people are still booing them in like neutral crowds. But to tell you what, it didn't matter. What's so sick about this Fnatic team was they win the fucking tournament anyway, whether you boo them or not. It's brilliant. They remind me of that like classic quote. I remember there's a quote where someone asked like Kobe Bryant, like, is it hard to play in the Kings Arena? Because they used to have the ones where they would all like hit cowbells and make loads of noise. And he just said, like, not really. Like, cowbell doesn't block my jump shot. Like, that's like the mentality Fnatic had. It's like, boo Cruz don't block headshots, mate. Boo all you like. Wins going to win the game anyway. And to have that level of mental fortitude, I think is amazing, because plenty of people, Cadians tried to do it many times. Plenty of people try to lean into that. But guess what? When the people are actually just booing you, like, we hate you, like, that's going to hurt your feelings. Like, it's not actually that cool. You want to pretend you're the fucking WWE heel, but you have to have a really sort of resolute mind to not let it get to you. So I was always very impressed that this team could just come through that. Like, that is crazy to be number one team when basically, like, the joke was because NIP existed, even your own countrymen, you don't want you to win. Like, Swedish fans used to ride with NIP, not Fnatic, if people don't know.
Yep.
Like, they had no fans. The joke was it was always an away game. They just won every fucking match, it felt like.
I think, like, and that's because, like, VP were a bit of a fan favorite, right? Like, everybody loved VP. And that was one of the big things. Like, in that, look, comparing these two teams and Richard bringing up ESL One Cologne 2015, my favorite event, I just went and looked at, like, the stats. Now, take this.
I can't even know what you mean by that, you fuck. Go on, keep going.
Pop this, boys. At that major. Now, keep in mind, I only played 3 maps in total. I was the 11th highest rated player at that major.
Oh, my God.
I don't believe it. I think I'm sitting here thinking that the filter's broken. What's going on? Now, look, I hopefully I've done this right, because otherwise I'm going to look like a fucking clown. But look, I don't know what that's got to do with what we're talking about here, but this is when I was playing, right? These two teams were around.
So keep going, yeah.
These two teams were you know, at the peak of their powers when I was playing. Now, the thing with the Fnatic guys was, I think comparing them to VP was the depth of talent was, like, much, much deeper, right? I don't think it's like, when you look at the players, people need to remember that the likes of Taz, Neo, and Pasha at that point were already relics, right? Like, they had already been winning shit back in the 1.6 days forever. Like, you were never looking to those guys. Actually, it's crazy how good Pasha was when you think about it, right? Like, but that's why when I have this comparison, for me, it's a no-brainer that Fnatic had much more depth, because JW was an X-Factor AWPer. He was an aggressive rifler that you guys, like, know, people at home who maybe weren't watching back then, like, what you know from R and Nafany getting stuck in these days or that, but JW was doing it with an AWP. And then after that, you just had so many good riflers, right? And you had someone great at calling in the mid-round, which was Pronax, which is one of the issues with VP, was always the identity crisis of which guy is fucking calling. And that was the cool thing, right? We talked about the positive of that, how they could just reuse those pieces with a different in-game leader. But the difference was, like, Fnatic had a guy who wanted to be an in-game leader, who had 4 really good players around him, and he was very good at using those players, right? So for me, like, when I look at this and I just try and measure it up, it's hard to see how VP compared. The best bit about them was they were overwhelming. They were experienced and they were overwhelming, right? Once that momentum, that plow that we always use was going, that's when they were hard to stop. But if you weren't afraid of them and you didn't let them get the momentum going, and you had just as many individuals who could stand up, which Fnatic had, right? Remember, three of the players in this team won the very first major. It's not like they didn't have any confidence playing on stages and shit. They won the very first major. You're going to have the biggest balls in the room, right? So I think when you stack these guys up, for me, Fnatic, like, I don't know if it'd be easily, but Fnatic were clearly, in my mind, the better between these two teams, player for player, approach to the game, which is a shame to say, because, like, I guess VP just come from that, well, it's not romanticized, but it's the era where, you know, we liked NIP early, well, we also like VP, right? These are stories that the people at home, we always wanted to see these teams play. Whereas when you compare that to Fnatic, they didn't get that shine. So that's, I guess, for a lot of people, that's maybe where they have a hard time distinguishing. One was more of a fan favorite, sure, but one in my mind was better.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I'll take that point, though, because I agree, pretty sweet. Like, I think of the two teams, the Fnatic team is the better one. I think historically they'd be considered greater. They were in the same era and they're arguably be greater, right? But one thing I would say is this. I can see why people were such a huge fan of VP, though, because the difference is when VP win, because it is the plow, it can just look so spectacular. Like, the raw eye test looks crazy. Like, like when they would win some of their games, you would think, like, holy fuck, this is, like, the hardest team to play you could ever play. Like, it's fucking impossible to beat. Whereas Fnatic, like, they did win a lot of, like, mega close and epic games. Like, I'll give you the analogy. If this was UFC, like, fucking VP really is just someone who's, like, a fucking, like ground and pound. Like, it's like, if they can, like, dominate you, get on top, smash you, they're going to utterly destroy you. And when they win, they're going to look, like, so terrifying. Whereas, like, Fnatic's more like, I don't know, some jiu-jitsu master who, like, they can always catch you in some last-second submission or wriggle out of something when they should be in trouble. Like, it was a different style of how good they were in the game, in my opinion.
I think the key to this matchup for me is that 2015 game, Richard, that you referenced, because I remember being on the desk for that game as well, and I remember the general feeling was, I mean, the whole thing of Virtus Pro is if the plow gets going, you're never going to stop them. They're going to run you over.
Did D-Man not insert himself into the analysis segment?
At 2015 Cologne, Virtus Pro hit that plow level, and this is one of the only times we've seen a team stop Virtus Pro when they're actually hitting their peak. And that is, I think, the defining feature of this little time travel. And even if you go back and look at Virtus Pro in 2014, like, they won the major in a Gfinity. They didn't win a whole lot because the problem is this was such a fan favorite team, and the charm of them was that you always believed they could do it, but they always let you down at the end, and you always came back and rooted for them the next time because it was just fun to be part of that ride. But the key is they're always going to let you down. They just always were. And that was unfortunately kind of like the curse of that Virtus Pro, is that everyone wanted them to win. They're incredibly fun to watch. They had some incredible legendary players and some incredible era-defining players like Snacks. But they always lost. They didn't take that win the way you wanted them to.
What you were talking about was definitely, if people don't know, it was even a famous betting dynamic. The dynamic went like this. When everyone's finally counting them out, they're always going to do a comeback from the slump and be good. But if you, like you say, if they're ever like right on the verge, it's like they should actually win this next major. That's when they're definitely going to lose the semifinals. They just would, if famous. Like, they're
fucking immortals.
The sick thing about VP, because they kept the same lineup for so long and competed at so many majors, if people don't know, these guys were in so many major semifinals. They were in something like 6 or 7 major semifinals, and they're only in the finals twice. Like, they left loads of potential titles on the table. Like, I tell you what, talk about like a what if. This is like the team that could have been at the top of this list, but isn't. You know,
yeah, you could probably do a what if in like 10 different parts of their of their run. But I mean, even if you look over towards Fnatic, like, this 2015 team was so fucking incredible. I mean, they won. This was the last year we had 3 majors. They won 2 of the 3. And then after Cluj-Napoca at the end of that year is when they dropped Pronax and brought Denison. And then they rattled off like 6 events straight to end the year going into Katowice of 2016. And then the team crumbled at the MLG Columbus major. But like, I mean, they just literally plug and played, you know, a more skilled player for Pronax and didn't even really need a true, solid, strong endgame leader. And were still just able to kind of dominate. And that, I mean, this Fnatic team, I think, is just overwhelmingly good.
Well, let's focus on the Fnatic team first, then. You know, like, because I'll get the duo question out of the way to start with. Obviously, we talk about incubators for talent. There was that LGB team that, you know, generated, you know, some incredible Swedish players, despite the org not really being anything to shout about. And we ended up with, you know, Olaf and Crims, you know, coming out of that. Now, for me, I remember thinking in 2015, at the time, a young man with my future all ahead of me. I remember thinking, and then Loda happened, and I remember thinking, this is the first time probably you will see a dominant Swedish rifling duo that you could probably talk about in the same breath as Get Right and Forest.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, and also, you know, in the same way Forest and Get Right were complementary, it was absolutely true of Crims and Olaf as well. Olaf a bit more bombastic, happy to get in your face, happy to frag out. You know, Crims, like, unbelievable. Like, just, he just would never die on a site and, you know, get those kills and buy time for his team. Just so good in, you know, in many ways, you could probably make an argument to say that the way this Fnatic team played, being so good on the CT, being that brick wall that could stop a team like the Plow running over you, you know, Crims was maybe even a more important part in that period of their development because he was so good defensively, so hard to kill on bomb sites. Like, he just, for me, he was like, he was the iron, you know, in the blood. Like, he was so fucking good. And watching those two play off each other was, when they used to play bomb sites together, it was a fucking delight. I mean, they were amazing.
Two players on Fnatic, actually, well, maybe even more, depending on where you want to go, but just for this, like, I mean, JW and Crims, like, really kind of, like, I don't know, like, broke the mold of how people thought the game could be played at the time, JW for obvious reasons. And I remember Crims, a lot of the conversation in early CSGO, it was so much around, especially with so many people coming from like 1.6 where you could hold angles, was like that it was impossible to hold angles because the peaker advantage was so strong.
Yeah,
and Crimson was like one of the really first players who like was like, nope, fuck you guys, I'm just gonna hold this angle and I'm gonna get the double kill, I'm gonna get the triple kill. Yeah. Like he was a rock inside bomb sites, and that was such a huge benefit to have, because a player like him was so important to this team, because there was so much chaos going on with JW's plays, with Olaf being told to just like have complete freedom to go kill, even Flusha playing like a rat, like having someone who could be like a rock behind all that chaos. He was so important when things went wrong in their chaotic plays that he was there to kind of make sure that he could pick up the pieces and maybe turn the round back in. And I mean, I think it's pretty telling. I have to feel like, especially with all the Dignitas players and Forrest and Freiburg and them being no longer competitive, he's got to be one of like the last players from the early days of CSGO outside of like the Danes that's still around.
Yeah. And he's still playing well. Yeah, he's still playing well. Like, he's still
playing well. Actually, another key thing, by the way, if I made a list of like most underrated players, I think Crims is the most underrated CSGO player of all time. Because what we're talking about now is a player who, by the way, when Fnatic recently had the like half decent line, who's still a good player now in fucking 2022/2021. They were talking about 2015 was this lineup, guys. Like, his longevity is impossible. And the cool thing is, the reason why his longevity lasts that long is he does have like a Swiss Army knife element to him. Like, do you need him to be a big fragger? He could do that. Do you need him to just do one frag around? He can do that. Do you need him to be the entry? He can do that. Do you want him to be a support player? He can do that. Do you want him to be an anchor? He can do that. Do you want him to play on the middle of the map? He can do everything. Like, if people don't know what Moses were referring to there, obviously this Fnatic was legendary for its Inferno CT side. These two players played the bomb site. Crimson and Olaf were the B bomb site holders on CT side. And they were just impossible because, first of all, you have to fight Olaf at the fucking banana. He's one of the most skilled players in the world. And if you get past him, like Moses says, Crims used to play the B bombs like Inferno, like old 1.6 Inferno, where the guy, you always put your best anchor player on that bomb, because what he does is his job is just delay people and try and just get like one extra kill. And Crims would just get two kills every time he come on the site. So even though in theory the whole point of the B bomb site, much like on Dust 2, is like at least we're going to get in and take the site. No, not even guaranteed when you play against these guys. You might either bleed so many people through attrition, you're in like a 2v2 at the end of the round when you go the bomb down, or you don't even get the bomb down, they just hold the actual site when you try and come through all the utility and then these two amazing riflers. So I even think the reason why they're, as a duo, Richard, they're so unique is they also used to literally play together either on CT sites or on T side. They were amazing when they were in 2vx scenarios, like retaking a bomb site or so. They were unbelievable. Or post plant, like these guys also directly could play off each other and seem to have like the telepathic communication.
Right. Also, I think if you...
Professor X over here,
Oh, nicely done. What a transition. That's why you get the big bucks.
I do.
I think one other player, if you want to talk about underrated players in like the grand scheme of Counter-Strike overall on Fnatic, it feels crazy to even say this, but in my mind, Flusha, like how he's not in more conversations for one of like the greatest Counter-Strike CSGO players of all time is crazy to me. Now,
he's never the guy who should have had the Clutch Minister title over fucking Zipix.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, he doesn't have exactly like a great longevity in CSGO, which is unfortunate. Sure. Things got cut short. But I mean, if you go back, like winning, what, three majors under his belt, he's been in the top 20 four different times. I think before Coldzera came along, he was the highest rated player at majors ever. He just always delivered incredible clutches, incredible moments that he's provided. I mean, Flusha, I don't even know if there's a way to properly describe his play style, but like, except to call him actually a rat, like he just did play like a rodent, and it was annoying.
Well, the funny thing is, if you think about it, there's actually a mad comparison, isn't there? Because Snax and Flusher are two of the best, like lurking, fucking, like weird. Yeah. These players that just get in weird spots. Although maybe the comparison would be, I think Snax was like a little bit more aggressive, maybe. But the reason why Flusher's style was the worst of all time is because he would lurk, but then it would be like a passive lurk where if you don't check that area, like you're gonna think, oh, it's fine. And then he would just like flank behind you. There'll be an extra guy in the site. Like it's just, it's like you say, it's just annoying Counter Strike. It's gonna tilt you if anything, as well as hard to play against,
Well, and especially considering he had that stigma around him the whole time. Like, if you're another player or you're a fan watching, like, you're probably not going to give him as much credit.
What I love about Flusha, though, is like anyone else, right? If they had the stigma that they cheat, would spend their whole life like almost begging fans, like, please just forgive me. Like, look, I've worked to show I'm not. Flusha almost used it to his advantage, like, maybe I do cheat. fuck around and fight. Like, fuck no, I have to play. He's getting away with it. Like, stop him. It's like, he's fucking cheating, grin.
Here's what you don't want to do, right? I don't give a fuck because I'm peacing out, right? So, listen, I'm going to say once and for all, let's do it. Like, come on. It's 2022. Who gives a fuck? Did Fletcher cheat?
We did this already. We did this on like the first episode.
Sure, we did that already.
Did we do that bit?
Simpsons did it.
Oh yeah, shit. I had the whole bit where I could be like, yeah, I was playing at this time and it wasn't going well, and I had the close relationship.
We'll have to cut this out then. I can't remember it. It's all a blur. Well, we'll
get Sam to come back in like a picture-in-picture, and he can redo the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right though. But I'll add to this. Right. This is when. Right, they were all accused of cheating. It weren't
just
true.
I wish we had today's broadcast. Like, here's a great idea for you, Richard. Let's just go back and create a whole broadcast around some of these old school events, just because it
just
would be
said
so
he's leaving,
cool.
Mate.
Yeah,
I know, but he's got to stick around for at least a couple more years. Like
Johnny Bonham.
Dude, if we could build a broadcast, like if you think of this Fnatic team, the fucking handshake incident, Boostgate, like these would be such cool stories going into a match, especially that first major of being like, these teams fucking hate each other.
Oh, for sure.
Like NIP and Fnatic fucking despised each other.
This is the thing, right? So hang on, I can bring it back. Remember, this was also, I'm trying to think of the timing, but do you remember when Pasha went on stream and he said, I talked to JW, and remember, this is when Pasha was even bigger than he is now, and he's winning MMA matches now. But he fucking apparently went up to JW and just said, like, did you cheat against us? Because there was that famous team where it was like, I want to say it might have been when they were called, like, was it Universal Soldiers or something, the Polish guys, I can't remember.
Okay, and then
on CPL Mills is how far back it is. And then JW was banging them out through the smokes and, like, you know, like, unbelievable, like every time you peek for a split nanosecond and he was killing them. And that was on what was that team called, like Bitches Money and Guns or something? Because it
doesn't help the case, I'll just say that the team's called that. You seem like you might be a little bit immature there for you.
Yeah,
might we're cheating or something, you know. Yeah,
and then obviously at the same time, I think this is like when wasn't like guys like Zelos and stuff getting pinched, but like Pasha went on a stream. And he said that he looked JW in the eyes and he said, like, did you cheat against us in that game? Because I 100% believe you did. And I will be totally fine if you just admit it to me now. But, like, I will fucking hate you forever if you don't.
Even though I will say, I've said this on past episode, if you actually meet Pasha, by the way, all you fans who don't know him, you're all idiots if you think he's some violent guy and everyone's scared. Like,
he's such
a lovely guy, no one is. But I will say, if that really was the first meeting and Pasha just walked up to you and he goes,
mate.
Now, listen. I'm going to give you one chance, and if you tell me, and tell me the truth, I'm going to look you in the eye.
Yeah.
If you tell me the truth, though, it's all going to be okay. Did you cheat against me? Like, fucking hell, mate. Like, can you even imagine you? I'm like,
yeah. And listen. It's the thing as well. Like, think about it. JW is doing it too. These two motherfuckers could have done a remake of Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. You know what I mean? They're so far apart.
That's so unreasonable.
You know what I mean? So, like, obviously, he's fucking going to be mad intimidated. So, I don't know. But apparently, Pasha always said we fucking cheated. You know, we cheated.
Oh, did it.
Yeah, that's what Pasha always said. Yeah. So, I mean, listen.
I implied he might have been under a little bit of duress. You know, I don't know if that would hold up in court. I'm just saying, like,
no, I don't think so either.
What a way to ensure that your opponents are going to be tilted every time you play against them as well. Like, of course, that's like telling someone, yeah, you got me down to one, bro. One HP. You were close. Like,
yeah,
you just stick another dagger in.
But I
do appreciate that just Pasha's personality is so, like, naive that he's just sort of like, did you cheat against me? Like, he has to tell you. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, no, just a bit of the honor. My bad. Then. Sorry, I apologize.
I just want to underline as well, because of the cheating allegations, and I've told the story before, but because it's time travel land, obviously it's got to stay for the record. You know, this is my open, right? So, and Duncan knows this because he cracks up every time. So when Fnatic won Cologne 2015. Which nobody wanted them to do. Remember, they're getting booed on stage when they beat VP in the semi-final, and they went up against Envy in the final round. Everyone's like, yes, You know, so everyone was cheering for Kenny. So anyway, when they won that major in 2015, and they were and they had to walk through the press room.
Oh yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, to get to the room they were doing the final press conference in.
And get ready for this, Chad. This is mental. This story. You don't even know where this story's going. It's so
so. To obviously, if you've never been in an esports press room, it's just a bunch of desks with just a bunch of nerds from all over the world with laptops, right? And but we are still, we're meant to be journalists, right? There's like a professional level of conduct you would expect. Well, fuck that, it's esports and everything's a travesty. So these fucking the Fnatic, the champions with the trophy, by the way, because they're going to pose for pictures with it, walk through the press room and the journalists are boo! They're booing the champions of the event who were there with, like, you know, ESL representatives and everything. They got absolutely fucking booed. Like, they were looking so sheepish, the Fnatic players. Like, I think, I remember Pronax just sort of laughing and, like, waving at everyone as they went through. They had to go up some stairs to the area where we were doing the press conference, right? So the story doesn't even end here. I go up there because I'm, like, maybe going to ask some questions or get an interview with them afterwards. I know the guys, you know, no big deal. So I'm stood there, and obviously, if you've ever done these open mic press conferences where anyone can ask a question, they're absolutely awful. Awesome. Because, you know, it's like the first guy goes, so how does it feel to win a major? And then no one else has any questions. So they're scrambling. They have to ask something. They want some original content for a publication. So they say things like, so JW, do you think you look like Flusher? You know, and they just crap dog shit questions. So these are all going on, and I'm while I'm sat there, another
question was that actually something they asked?
Fuck knows. I mean, they were all trash. I've seen some horrific things down the years at these open mic press conferences. E League too was a consistent. But anyway, so the journalist next to me was from 99 Damage, the German publication. Oh, cool. I won't name him. He's from Germany. He like gives me a dig, you know, in the ribs with his elbow. And I said, what's up, man? He said, are you going to ask a question? He went, maybe, but I just want to let you know, I fucking hate Fnatic. Fucking hate them. They're cheating pigs and scum. And then he held up his phone, NIP logo on it as his screensaver. So
bad, that whole story, isn't it? I know.
These,
press,
like,
of course, press.
Yeah, and these were the journalists.
Get this guy over here, get him out.
So you can't even imagine how bad the fans were. So one of the things I always fucked with, I almost think as well, by the way, that what happened with Boostgate, it's the genesis of you can never be ruffled ever again.
Yes.
I think honestly, if Boostgate doesn't happen, I don't think they become this dominant team. I think it's an integral part of their identity because of this.
I think we mentioned it in the previous episode as well. I mean, this team almost just broke up after Boostgate. Like, Olaf almost quit.
So
I forget what, there was one other player as well.
I think it was Olaf and Krims were the two that were going to quit. Yeah,
they were just like, fuck it, this is stupid. Like, what are we doing here? So we almost didn't even have this team, which would have been such a travesty. I think this is actually, for reasons outside of the game, this is one of the most compelling. Both of these teams, honestly enough, are two of the most compelling rosters in Counter-Strike and teams in Counter-Strike we've ever had.
Oh, mate, if you made a movie and Act 1 is they're the number one team, but then the Boostgate happens and they don't win that major and their rivals win instead, like, that movie's going to be fucking amazing. Like, who isn't waiting for the rest of that? That would be the sickest opening of all time, because then they do go on to win everything.
Yeah, well, look, so here's a question. So we get some fresh content and we don't, like, tread old ground. I think Pronax is like very cruelly left out of the conversation when we talk about great IGLs in CSGO. For some reason, his name never comes up. You know, we always go with, like, all the names that we know, obviously Glaive at the top, but, you know, I see names that for me don't belong in the conversation to the same degree as Pronax, end up being squeezed in ahead of Pronax. You know, like, for example, MSL, people go, oh, you did really well and you did this, and it was, you know, blah, blah. And it's like, no, Pronax is like, this was a great systems team. This was a great tactical team. He was a masterful leader. He knew when to take timeouts. He knew when to change the flow of the game and the energy of the game. And they were a really dominant force, just not for as long as an Astralis was. And, you know, it seems to me that Pronax doesn't get talked about a lot as a great IGL. So why is that?
I would think, push back on that. Yeah, go on, Chen.
Well, I was going to say, I think the reason maybe like within this team, he doesn't get as much shine. Like the one that won the first major, right? The one with Schneider and Devil Walk, right? That one right there is where you could give him a, like he would get a lot more props for that type of a win, right? But I think the reason it doesn't get as much shine, Jason mentioned before when Dennis joined and they went on to win a bunch of trophies in a row. Now, sure, not majors, but still trophies. So that's going to detract a little bit from Pronak, unfortunately. And Olof was the best player in the world, right? So he had a lot of players around him that were really good, and they would some of the, cause they would also produce these moments in games where it's not down to a Pronak's call that Olof goes nuts on the tech nine, right? So I think that what he brought was overshadowed by what the rest of them brought and that period of time. That's the problem for Pronax, I think, right? And because he wasn't a fragging in-game leader, you know, he was just seen as, oh, everybody else is getting their numbers and why isn't Pronax? Whereas if you go back to the 2013 and early, you know, before that Fnatic roster change lineup with Schneider and Devil Walk, I think that's where Pronax would get a lot more of his props. It's just unfortunately in this one, we're talking about a different constellation of the team, I think.
Yeah, their win conditions always seem to be separate from like any kind of good tactical or strategic game plan. Like I just, you know, especially when
that was the base, but it wasn't it wasn't the factor, the differentiating factor, right? Differentiating factor was Olof being the best. If you wanted to send Olof out on B platform on cobblestone to get you a kill,
he's going to get you one kill, probably two more often than not.
This way, when Flusher was later in Cloud9, and in Cloud9 he was temporarily the IGL at one point when they didn't have Golden or whatever. So someone told me, I can't remember if it was Flusher himself or like Automatic, someone told me in an interview that they basically, Flusher just told them, like the Fnatic style of IGLing is you just play default rounds and the players do what they want in the round. Like it's, the idea is you have a very simple game plan and from there you hope your players are just better. So like I'm sure that's a very simplistic like one sentence version of it, but that I think unfortunately that is sort of what people think of when they think of Fnatic. They think like the players were brilliant, they don't necessarily think it was like Pronax. Like essentially I get the vibe people think Pronax would have only done it with those exact players. Like if you just give him a, here's the difference, maybe this is even why Richard, as you say, if someone thinks MSL's better, the difference is if I just give like random pieces out of a toy box to MSL, MSL probably make a half decent squad that like run and worked at. Pronax, I get the vibe like he was his best when he had the best players, and then what he contributed was the cherry on the top, which is a perfect mid-round call or like a cool move at the end of a round when there's 20 seconds left or something. That'll help you get a nick a few extra rounds, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, do you not feel that he did anything to kind of like make you believe, you know, like, I mean, Godsent weren't like...
I think
initially when he was there,
I think in the early going, I used to have a feel like Pronax had more in the early stages of Fnatic. I felt like Pronax had like a heavier hand in like making tactical calls. And then the more I watched Fnatic back in the day, because I remember being along the lines with you where I thought Pronax was like this great special in-game leader. And then eventually I just kind of, and this isn't to detract anything from him, but I just eventually realized watching Fnatic that this was the whole concept of like the Fnatic hive mind that we always brought up with Fnatic, was like, there's no way one man can like control and micromanage and make these decisions across an entire map. Like a lot of the Fnatic style was actually, in some ways, it feels like they were a little bit like ahead of the meta. They were so unique in the way they played at the time, but just it was a lot down to like intuition from players and sensing when they had a weakness, sensing when it was their turn to make move, or sensing when it was their turn to take some attention and then just hide passively and allow someone else to make their play. And I don't know, just eventually I kind of drifted away from the idea that Pronax was having some great impact. And I'll tell you what, even at ESL Barcelona, I specifically remember this on stage as well, because Fnatic had another one of their crazy comebacks late in the event as we went on. And it was Flusher who gave like a post-game interview and we were like, what did you guys say during like the timeout? And he was just like, yeah, we didn't really know what to do. We were getting beat. So we just said, Olof, go kill. And it's like they just had that ability to like be able to just command one of their players to just go find a frag. That was the strategy, and it worked. So, I mean, I'm with Chad. I think there's just too many factors that Pronax probably did bring to the team, but got way too overshadowed.
But let's just get, like put this out there, right? How many in-game leaders have won three majors?
True.
Right, like you, yeah. And this is the thing, right? And that's the problem. Like when you build this story of like all these like. Flush is a very smart player. So when you build that, you have these players around you who are very good at what they do, are very good with the output. The thing is, what goes for a lot of people, if you've never played, like, and you don't have the don't understand the inner workings of a team, what an in-game leader is doing is taking the burden off the rest of the players mentally, right? He's the one who's following the flow of the game. Can we break their money? Are we force buying? He's the one who's signing off on those decisions. Sure, you have to have the players who need to execute that plan, but Pronax needs to understand what pieces he has available to even make that happen, right? Sure, Olaf has his moves he'd like to do. Sure, you whack Crims in upper bathrooms on overpass, you whack him connector on fucking Mirage, he's going to get his numbers on the CT side. But Pronax is still a guy who won three majors, the very first major, mind you, with Devil Walk and Schneider, a team that should, like, you can't even put it into words. It comes from nowhere, right? This victory of the team. He wasn't even in the team for long, right? He wasn't even in the team for a long period of time. So he obviously had some contribution here. And Counter-Strike, once upon a time, used to be more about feeling in the calls. It didn't used to be as by the book, right? You can study the Counter-Strike book now, and you can kind of have a good understanding of, in this situation, we know they're going to have a 2-3 split. Let's go put pressure on the two. We'll try and draw the rotation. You know, it was more being able to, like, read the game and make the calls in those microseconds, because the game wasn't played, I want to say, as rigidly as it is now, right? There was a bit more flux available. So to have an in-game leader who could keep the finger on the pulse, keep on top of the economy, make that call when he has to, and wins three majors, right? Yeah, I think Richard's probably, like, onto something in the sense that he might get slept on a bit because he's not a system in-game leader, right? He obviously had a system and a way to approach, but he didn't make the blueprint like Glaive with Astralis. He's not constantly bringing up newer talent, like, say, like an MSL or somebody like that, so we can see that, oh yeah, he can get them to this point. Pronax just took the teams that he had and he won majors, right? So
definitely the most underrated person to win three majors. There you go.
Yeah.
Nailed it. I look at him, I mean, to make an American football reference that you guys might find appealing, he's like the game manager. He's like the Trent Dilfer. Like, he just, his job is just to not be there and not be a liability and not screw up massively. And that, actually, that's probably not fair. That's not his only job, but that's what I felt like within this team was, like, he has all, everyone else is going to make Fnatic win. Pronax is there if he's needed as, like, a fallback plan. Like, he probably had to make some tough calls when they ran out of ideas, but he was never, the point.
I'm going to make this move over to Virtus Pro, and I'm just going to, again, set the table with a bit of history. Obviously, Virtus Pro, I'm sure a lot of people now, when they think of that brand, it probably is for a lot of fans that came in at this around about this period. They're probably thinking, you know, it's synonymous with Polish players and the Polish, because these guys made it synonymous with them. But of course, obviously, in January 2014, this is the reason why I selected 2014 as the iteration. That's when they first come into the org. They replaced that team that had Guardian and Angel and Dozier and those guys. The team that was that the team that ended the streak,
or was that? It wasn't with Guardian. That was on the Adren. Yeah. But yeah, that was the team.
Yeah,
870. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, they were already replacing a very well regarded team. I mean, they also had Fox, the Russian Fox, obviously, you know, on the team as well. You know, it was pretty well regarded. It was a good team. It was a CIS org and CIS identity, and they brought in Polish, you know, players. Some fans didn't like that, but they came in January. By March, they'd won a major. They won Katowice, you know, in 2014. And obviously, everyone knows the story, I'm sure, by now. You know, I've told it many times, because I know Taz, going back to 1.6. I remember there was a moment where the brought out and being polished up and everything, and it was right at the start of the tournament and players were getting oriented, and Taz just, like, walked over that trophy and said, I'm leaving with this for sure. It was such a big moment in kind of Polish esports that, you know, we had this, you know, a big event, a major, you know, in Katowice, and these guys really, really wanted it. And one of the things that this team has, they've always had a great sense of, like, history. Like, whenever, like we said about it earlier, whenever you count them out, that's when they're at their most dangerous. But the problem you've also got is, after Katowice, yeah, they were sort of the perennial runners-up. There's so many semi-finals on this list, you know, like...
That's an underachieving team, if people don't know, I would agree.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they go basically right, you know, right the way through, like... Even in Copenhagen games, they lost to NIP, who obviously, you know, by 2014, they're having a bit of a wobble. They're not the all conquerors they used to be. They were like fourth of the star ladder. They also third in the ESEA, the global division. They famously, that was the when they lost to that complexity lineup, the old school complexity lineup. There's a lot of semifinals on the list, and obviously in Cologne, you know, they lost to in Cologne 2014. That's when they lost to LDLC.
The Kaylee jump shot,
which, you know, who knows?
Another what if?
Yeah, there's a multiverse episode for you. What if Kaylee didn't fucking cheat the rat? But, you know, the DreamHack 2014, obviously, as well, semi-finalists there. I just feel there was this weird, I don't know if it was the friction with the lineup, or if it was, you know, but they did seem like, it's really strange. We talk about Astralis, the old Astralis, 2017 Astralis, as being the choking team. Nah, like, people forget these guys choked in a ton of semifinals and in a ton of big games.
I actually don't know if I would say they choked. This is like the funny thing about this team is I actually don't think they choked. I think that those some of those losses were the correct level that Virtus Pro was at, and they actually had overachievements in sequence, like mixed in. This is one of those teams where there was some like weird intangible effect of this team in Counter-Strike that shouldn't be there because we're playing a digital game. But like, I guess the traditional sports way to say it was to be like, this team just has hustle. Like everyone on this team is just busting their ass and working so hard. There's that intangible that allows them to overcome things. When I watch VP play, I was just like, man, like, Neo is so far below the level he should, like he was at previously. Taz is really like, this is slipping out of his control, out of his game is slipping away. Pasha's like great, but I mean, you can tell like there are some facets of his game that were just so abysmal, like his movement, which he would attest to. Like Taz and Pasha were like watching two guys play Minecraft in the CSGO universe. Their movement was just like gross at times, but for some reason they were able to like will themselves in such deficit talent situations to win clutches or win a big game or knock somebody out. But I don't think they choked because I just don't think they were meant to be the team that was always going to be winning. If there was one team I could go back in time and give like 10 more trophies, it would be this VP roster because I love everything about them. I love everything about watching this team play. But I like they were just so surprising that they were able to keep it up and stay competitive through all the years.
I know what Jason means by that in the sense that, like, put it this way, if I think of playing against an opponent that chokes, I'd be loving it. Cause it's like the joke is if you did play the old Astralis players, you know, at some point in the game, they're going to have that moment where they wobble. It's like, as long as I can get survived to that moment, I can win, right? I would say if you're playing VP, I always used to say VP was the hardest team in the world to beat, even if they didn't win all the competition. It's really hard to put that team away. This is the team where when you get to 14-14 against Virtus Pro, even if they don't win these matches, mate, it's going to be hard to get over the line. Like, they never give you the win. You have to take it from them.
Yeah, would you consider them like trophy gatekeepers, right, in a way?
I used to always say, like, if you look in history, because they were around so long, they pretty much, like, they're the team that sort of verify every great team in history, aren't they? Like, if you could beat VP and win the major, that's usually when you're number one.
Yeah. Mm. It's an interesting way to look at the team, right? Because you try and think in this period of time, what makes this team stand out from the rest around them? Like, Snax was a good player, right? Pasha was tidy on the AWP, so even with the movement, he was like RPK with an AWP, right? Like you put him somewhere, he did the shot, you'd want him to. He's gonna get the kill, right? But the thing is, outside of that, where's the defined, like, okay, Virtus Plow, so they're a momentum base. On train, T-side defaults, they would squeeze you with just a standard default and they just have a very good understanding of how to do it as a team. But that's it. The factor for this squad that stands out is the fact that they were a team. That's the best part I have for it. Like, I wouldn't even, they weren't like meta defining. It's just they could, if they could smell blood and they could roll over you and they could keep pushing you and keep pushing you and keep, they'd do it, right? Like they were one of these teams who, and I think we've lost a bit of it obviously because of the online era, and now we're slowly getting back into it, but they were one of these teams who knew how to play on a stage. They understood, like, once they got there, how to play on a stage and how to win these rounds that they should, right? To put you in a position and keep that pressure on you. So, like, I would just define these, like, yeah, they're a strong team, but they lack that next gear. They lack the firepower depth across the team to take them to that next level.
Also, I mean, if you were a viewer who wasn't around like in this era of Counter-Strike as well, like I think within this VP roster, obviously Snax for a period there was like a top five player in the world and really kind of showcased one of the first players to really kind of showcase how you could really play around smokes and mess with smokes within the game. He was probably one of the most
the original smoke criminal.
Yeah, he was.
Yep. And then also, like, Pialli was pretty streaky in ups and downs, but when he was on, like, you could probably put him on a list for best bombsite makers. Yeah, it was disgusting.
Another player who was accused of cheating, if you remember. Yeah,
it's a classic.
I've accused him myself a few times.
Up G fan.
Difference is he's a cool guy because he can just have a beer and go, yeah. No, if I all need to know is I'll even tell this is what he'd be like a violation. Guys like that would, if you told them, they would just laugh and go, like, yeah, that was a pretty dodgy clip, wasn't it? Yeah. Can take it. Fair play. Don't get fucking moody. Yeah.
Yeah, Pialli was a good guy to get a beer with for sure. He was a funny motherfucker. First time I ever met him.
One time later, came up to me at a different event and just came up at the bar and just goes, seen any more good clips recently? And then got another drink. And I was like, this guy's actually a legend. I like this guy. I like the call this guy's Jim.
I think first time. I'm sick. First time I went out for a beer with him was at one of the Take TV events, and I literally saw him put his fist through a fucking table in the middle of a game. Like, he fucked up the table to the point where they had to, like, do a pause and, like, move his mouse around, put, like, fucking proper dent in it. Like,
is he bigger than I remember? I always imagined Pialli as, like, this scrawny little...
Nah, Pialli was one of those, like, you know, wiry, muscular kind of guy. Yeah.
He's like the guy where if this was, like, the movie Snatch, you wouldn't have the boxing fight against him. Yeah, exactly. In his eye as well.
You definitely switch fighters, for sure.
Exactly.
I mean, look, this, the problem, because I don't know, I still want to push back on this idea, like, when I'm looking through this, it's kind of interesting because one of the teams they lost to a bunch was 2014 Fnatic. They lost to them a ton of times and they weren't really competitive in these games, in these moments. There's even, if you look at the Global Invite Division final, they lost 4-0. They played them in two best of threes. Like back to back.
Oh, the ESEA one back in the day.
So that was back in the map.
It was a double in bracket.
Yeah. When we did double in brackets, proper style. So yes, they had to come back and beat them once. And they had to. Yep.
Yeah, and you know, and it's like, listen, it was like, you know, 16-10, 16-10, 16-13, 16-13. You like, you got to take a map, surely. And so, you know, for me, it's like, what is preventing them even being able to adapt? I can segue into something I did want to talk about off the back of this. Is it the fact that they lacked an actual true IGL in any traditional sense?
Because actually, the angle on this, I want to take. Yeah. Like, so this spins it on. Basically, here's the problem. I think we're seeing the team totally differently from where we're initially framing it. So I'll tell you how I see VP in an absolute sense. The fact they're even in this conversation right now against the Fnatic team, which, by the way, was considered the greatest team of all time until Astralis came along, and that they're even on this list is actually a sign that they massively overachieved in some context. But if you look, like you say, how many times they're in semis, how many times they were playing against the best team, if they win like one extra match every tournament, like we even higher on this list. So it looks like they're underachievers. My problem is if you look at how they're constructed as a team, they have no business in being on this list. Like, where's their truly all-time great IGL? Doesn't really exist. Where's the truly all-time great AWPer? It's fucking Pasha, who, as we said before, moves like he has a negev. And then where's like your consistent superstar player? You don't really have one. Like, Snacks is up and down. He has a different style. They don't have any of the traditional pieces in Counter-Strike. In fact, the lineup itself is an alien Frankenstein mix where you take two really old school players who used to be your stars but are now your supportive and core. And then you've got an AWPer who's not really an AWPer, but he is because no one else AWPs. And then you've got these two new school players where one's an entry, one's a... It's like the team's such a mess. So to me, the fact that you even sort of patchworked all that together and were as good as you were is amazing. Yeah. Like, I'll even say that. The thing about how defined Chad is, I agree. I don't think they were the best at anything. I don't think they were the best at any map except maybe that rework of Nuke later on when it came out.
Train.
I don't think they had the best IGL. I don't think they had the best AWP. I don't think they had the best player. So actually, why were they even competitive with all these teams that had all these things? Think about what we said about Fnatic. They had Orofmeister. They had the best team. They had the best map pool. So how can a team like VP compete with them? Actually, it's because of like intangibles and things that don't show up in the server. Like, for example, always had this, even though they were never the best on a map usually, they had the mega canny map pool though. They would always have a map pool they could play with and go right in the middle of that map pool. and play anyone. Then you think of even players like Taz, who were supposed to be the washed players. Mate, there were certain spots, they were for some reason the same ones as 1.6. But if you put Taz as inside player on CT train or on the fucking top of that nuke hut on CT nuke, he is ridiculously good at those positions. As in, like, at those positions, he's as good as, like, the best player at that position. But he's supposed to be, like, on paper, like, worst player in VP. So you can see, if you have a player like that, and by the way, another thing on someone like Taz is, even when his stats for the event are like red stats on HLTV, he'll just have a map where he just drops 30. He'll just do that in a major. He'll just have one game where he just drops 30 and your worst player just dropped 30 against like a Fnatic, an NIP, a TSM or some. So like the elements they had that like just, you can't see him in the stats thing. Same with Neo. Neo was nothing as a star player. Wasn't a star player in CSGO, but what a mega like clutch round winner in big games. Someone who, again, he'll just have a half, he'll have a CT half on train, we'll just get 20 kills. And suddenly you'll win a tournament off that. Like, I think these guys, like, they were essentially, if you want them to be the best team ever, they're never going to come up to it. But if you look at like what they were, it's incredible this team even existed.
The thing that always stands out for me is the Pasha aspect, because obviously I know going back with the players, like, I don't even, Pasha wasn't meant to have a long term future with these guys. Oh. If you know your history. He wasn't like Taz and Neo might even have said this publicly, but there was this feeling that like they had to micromanage him too much and that he was a very, let's say, not intelligent player. He's more intuitive. And so I always got the impression that very early on when he emerged through, because remember this, but I know lots of people threw Golden Five around even when they had different. You know, I know that's a bugbear for Duncan, but yeah, this Pasha wasn't.
Because, you know, maths and the way the number five works.
Yeah,
maybe,
exactly, yeah.
Full way to sell merchandise, though.
Five to be the same five, like, not four or three.
Yeah.
Three Carmack. Numbers mean something, mate.
I know. So, Pasha...
Yeah, all about numbers meaning something else, son, yeah.
Pasha was not one of the Golden Five. So he was a guy that I always... meant to be on borrowed time. Sure. And I still think even when this team in like 2014 were winning majors and winning tournaments, I always felt they were keeping an eye out for a potential upgrade or somebody new that they could bring in, and it just never materialized. So I know, Duncan, you'll be a good person to talk about now. I'll bring Jason in as well. Tell me about the Pasha phenom in this lineup, because he's another player that absolutely shouldn't work. He shouldn't be a major winner.
No. I mean, especially because I would say, like, the funny thing is, when they brought him along in 1.6, it took them like a year and a half to actually integrate him into the lineup. They didn't win anything in that period of time. They were like also runs at majors, even in big tournaments, they would come like second or top four. Then when they got him going towards the end of 1.6, they started winning, but then they had to change to CSGO. And in CSGO, because they took the same lineup, they didn't win for the first 2 years. Like, they had to get rid of Lord and Cuban and those guys to make this new squad. So actually, I agree. I always had the vibe personally. Like, he just got that last spot in 1.6 and he was a good player, so that's fine. But in CSGO, I always got the vibe. If there had have been some like standout Polish AWP, he would have just been replaced. They would have just cut him. Because again, like you say, behind the scenes, the
vibe used to abuse him as well. Yeah,
vibe was he was the scapegoat if they fucked up or someone did the wrong thing. It's like, oh, bloody Pasha fucked up again. Like, that was actually the sort of vibe in the squad. Like, I know they're all going to spin it the opposite, like he was best pals, but don't believe the hype.
There was a famous interview on, and it was definitely from the, I want to say definitely from the 1.6 era. It's so long ago. But I remember, I think it was Taz said, there are some people on our team that play for HLTV stats. Do you remember that quote, Duncan?
It wouldn't surprise me he said it.
Yeah. And he was definitely talking about Pasha, okay. for sure. So you know, which by the way, was the perception, because if you were a 1.6 fan at that time, you'd had the Golden Five. Sure. Pasha had to really work out to win those motherfuckers off.
Oh, of course.
You know, because like it was a legendary. So, I mean, I always felt that Pasha was kind of like, it's like you say, what's mad about this team is, you know, to even have made it to this, like, stage of the tournament, to even be in the discussion when they don't have a recognized IGL. They swapped IGL around, like, between Neo, Taz, I think Snacks had a go at one point. Yeah, obviously, yeah. Pasha never did. And you know, you've got an AWPer that's not a great AWPer. You've got, you know, all these like People are good. They're really good. But, like, I don't know, together they were just greater than the
You know, even the opping fact, though, is like, it's VP in a nutshell. Because, like, as we joke, we're all joking here and everyone's going to think we're going too far. I'm telling you, go look up an old Pasha POV. You're not going to believe it. Like, you're actually going to think this can't be real. Like, it was just a pro match. Like,
all the players used to say he had the worst movement of any terrible pro. It really did.
Like,
seen,
but the joke is, like, what he showed with opping is that, like, famous principle where, you know, they say, like, the greatest swordsman doesn't fear the second greatest swordsman. They fear the guy who's never picked up a sword. Because the premise goes, like, the second great swordsman's going to fight according to technique and theory, and you're going to predict what he's going to do. That's why I always thought Pasha's opening was like, because he had this weird movement and super weird even firing. Like, he wasn't the quickest firing style either, by the way. Like, he would just, like, get kills. Didn't he make sense? Like, how was he getting these kills? Like, it must have been really frustrating to play against. A lot of players told me it was really hard to play against him, actually.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when I was with Fallen and Liquid, he just called it the Pasha peak whenever a player, like, made one of those, like, stupid, like, they got too close to a corner and their gun barrel just showed enough to bait him into a shot, but they didn't, like, mean for it to happen. He calls it the Pasha peak because that's exactly what, like, Pasha's ridiculous movement. Everyone expected the peak to come at a certain timing, and it came, like, half a second later because Pasha didn't realize, like, his knee was showing on the other side of the wall. I actually, this VP team...
By the way, in that scenario, I actually really want it to be totally true what you just said, though. It would actually make me a bit sad if Pasha was actually, like, knowing this and beating him. I need it to be that he was like a savant and he didn't even know he was doing this, but it was just working and making all the best offers, like, accidentally fired too quickly. Like, oh shit, he didn't fucking come out. Like, that makes it better if that's true. I genuinely hope that story is totally true.
I think for me with this VP team, I actually, like, wrote an article years ago about Neo, and I just wrote it and never really released it because I never finished it. But the concept was that, like, Neo was, like, the subtle superstar of the team, because this team, like, with all its broken pieces coming together, wouldn't have worked if Neo wasn't as, like, selfless and humble in the sense of his role within the team. Like, whenever Taz got fed up in-game leading, Neo was like, I'm there, I'll pick up the pieces. When Pasha decided he didn't want to op anymore, Neo was like, don't worry, I'll pick up the AWP and I'll find a way to make it work. Like, Neo was always the guy who got shuffled around to pick up the pieces that were just getting left as the other players wanted to adapt or change something or were just fed up or frustrated. And in that sense, like, I don't think this team actually works if they don't have Neo, despite the fact that he wasn't putting up great numbers. If he's not there to, like, slide into, like, certain positions for a certain period of time, I think this team probably breaks down and breaks up far, far earlier than it did.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that. When you use the word humble, there's no better word that describes Neo, in my opinion.
Yeah.
A guy who, like, imagine
I don't even know
being...
if he's humble or if he just doesn't realize how fucking good he was and, like, what, like, I don't even actually know.
All you need to know is this. I don't think he ever said this in the interview because, sadly, we used to edit those E-League interviews, like, down to the bare bones. But I think this got cut. Famously, I asked him when we were at E-League, because that was, like, 2016. I said to him in E-League, like, you surely know now how good you were in 1.6. And he actually admitted it's only CSGO that made him realize how good he was in 1.6, because the joke is he used to be such a humble guy, he would try not to believe he was the best player in 1.6 and in his team, whereas the premise is in CSGO where he saw, like, he was not as good, obviously way off the pace. He said that actually that's the only time I realized how good I was. So if anything, it shows he must have been one of the most absurdly humble superstars of all time.
Really was. I remember, you know, introducing when we were hanging out, you know, introducing him to friends and stuff and saying, like, this is like Neo, like, one of the best players to ever touch a game. He'd just be like, don't do it. Like, he used to fucking hate it.
Yeah,
you know, don't
it.
Do that. And you know, it's like, you're right, Jason. Like, I feel that what you need, because we're talking about duos, right? So this is where I'm going to, like, wrap up the talk and get towards voting. We've talked about all these great duos. Taz and Neo are a duo like no other in the sense, you know, we've talked about complementary skill sets. These guys maybe don't necessarily have that. And also as well are drastically different personalities as people and have had a really fractious relationship. Like, if Get Right and Forrest are like the brothers that would do anything for each other, and, like, and you know, Crims and Olaf are the telepathic, you know, rock'em sock'em connection. Like, Taz and Neo, and I'm sure we've used this, they are the parents that can no longer stand each other but stay together for the kids. It's the only way I can describe the dynamic between them, because they argue back and forth. And typically, you know, Taz will get what he wants. And Taz is capable of being both aggressive and passive aggressive. And Neo is kind of the guy who's just like, well, you know, listen, we've been together for so long now, we kind of change it up. But, you know, I know Neo will occasionally back and forth ideas. There was one time. Famously, when Neo literally took the reins, he said, "I don't like where we're going. I'm going to have a go at IGL, and it's you know, I'm stepping breach." So it's just such a weird. I can't, compared to every other great duo in Counter-Strike history, they really are a unique proposition. And I think without that energy, we're not talking about VP at all.
I think what's defining about the duo is, you know, while the other ones that we've talked about already like have to do with like how they function in game, I think for Neo and Taz, it had to have been like a certain mentality and a certain focus on winning. Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, the legend of these two guys was that they didn't really like each other at all as well back in the day of Polish Counter-Strike, and they were actually on rival teams within Poland, and neither of their teams were good enough to compete internationally, and they would just butt heads and go battle like in the regional events, and eventually it got to a point where both of them were like, this is stupid. Like, let's bury the hatchet. Let's put it behind us, or let's tuck our drama away for the moment, and let's build a Polish team that actually allows each of us to compete on the international stages and against the international squad. So at least this pairing found a way to kind of come together, maybe probably not for in-game reasons other than acknowledging that they're both important pieces and critical pieces to the Polish scene, but just saying we both just want to win and we want to make a name for ourselves internationally, and the only way we can do it is with each other. And I think that understanding probably united them more than anything.
By the way, that also plays into the other angle of this team, which makes them probably the most unique team on the list, which is because they were working with a way more limited talent set of people in Poland that they could potentially recruit. Like, the difference is the teams they're competing against are like Swedish, fucking Danish. Like, these are the areas where on this list there's going to be like 25 Swedish names or 30 Danish players. So, like, there's loads of talent. Like, there's only going to be these Polish players. That's it. So they had to work with this like limited core, and they had to find ways to reinvent the team, to find new roles. Because the premise was, like, even if you'd have brought in someone like a Mihu, who skill-wise could have been in the team, the level up it would take to get him to the same level of knowing how to play in the squad and at the top level and immediately be competing for titles, even though you would think in the like long run it was the wrong idea not to eventually change players, they made it work somehow. I think it's the only team I've ever seen which could just keep going back to the top. Normally, it's only a roster move takes you back to the top. It's only like cutting out whoever's like the cancer of the team or his game's just gone to shit. It's very rare you can have the same players and just swap a role, like, oh, we're back to the top of the game again. Like, that's impossible to do. You can't do that. That's so impressive from this squad.
In review, it makes sense, like with what we're talking about now, with the fact that the BMW did fracture the team. Because before that, let's say Neo, Pasha and Taz bring from 1.6 days at least before the tail end, when stats, fuck stats. Like, when you used to play Counter-Strike early, you're not going and looking at the HLTV scoreboard. You're never really looking at the scoreboard after, because when you defused or planted the fucking bomb, or the bomb exploded, you got +3 on your fucking KD. So it's not like that even fucking mattered. So if they bring that mentality of we win Counter-Strike as a team, which is what the mentality used to be once upon a time, who would have thunk it, into this roster, right? And then continue to reinvent the wheel time and time again, like we saw with different in-game leading and role switches, this, that, and the other. And then the BMW comes and it's the only thing that then fractures them from everybody buying into this being an actual team. That makes sense why it all went to the fucking dogs after that. Look, it lasted longer than it should have. It was probably better consistently than it should have been. But the way that they, and this is probably why when you talk about Taz and Neo, well, they have to be the heart of this. They're the ones together. They're the ones whose philosophy with newer parts sprinkled in over all those years is what ended up getting them to be on this list. So, yeah, there's a lot of key factors to look out for them as a team. But, yeah, it's just a shame that like a team that was such a fan favorite and everything like that would, you know, that we, like, I guess we're all probably in the same place with this actual matchup, right? Just a shame that we're going to lose another fan favorite here. I feel like we just culled NIP and VP in one fell swoop.
Well, that's the thing with fan favorites, you know, they often aren't the true greats. I think that you have to hit a sweet spot of sustained excellence where initially, you know, the neutral isn't really going to appreciate how good you are, and only the hardcore fans of that org are going to love it. You know, it's like, man, I remember growing up in the 90s when, you know, Man United were fucking winning everything. I fucking hated that Man United team. Now that I'm a little bit older, a bit more mature, I can look back and go, wow, what a fantastic, what a fantastic team with so many players that, like, again, punching above their weight in terms of what they are with just sheer desire and a fantastic blend of players. And to look back at that team and see it as iconic is the only appropriate response now. So I get it. You know, fan favorites very often don't have the staying power. And I'm sure that's going to be the situation now as we get to our sad, sad vote. I'm not going to go first this time. I reckon Jason should go and stick the knife in. Go on.
Yeah, Fnatic 2015. I'll stick it in all the way. Again, yeah. I mean, they already proved that they did it in real life to begin with, so that makes this one pretty easy. But I don't even, outside of like the plow being activated, you can't even really talk about a whole lot of win conditions. I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler. I actually think 2015 Fnatic is the second best team of all time. Like, I think this team's going to go deep when this time travel lands. I have them winning this easily.
Yeah, I like your logic there. I'll twist the knife. I think, yeah, Fnatic win this one.
Yeah, the problem is, as Jason says, since his team actually played a whole bunch of times in real life, we also, it's not as much of a shadow box, is it? Like, we just know Fnatic was the better squad. By the way, like I said before, I would spin it the other way. VP's one of the reasons why this Fnatic team is so great, because they were able to consistently get over a team as good as this and win the majors off it and win the championships, etc., etc. By the way, there's plenty of teams that have been knocked out of tournaments by this VP squad, almost every great team in history. So, yeah, I think it's got to be Fnatic for this one. Mm. Still, respect to the VP, very good team.
Yeah, and great point, Duncan. Sort of reminds me of that classic like period again, like 90s middleweight boxing. You know, when it was like there was so many mega teams that were like all good, like stylistic matchups in Counter-Strike. Same for that period, you know, where you got like, you know, Eubank and Ben and McClellan, fucking all these other legends, Collins. You know, so yeah, it's sad to see them go, but they were always the spoilers. You know, always the bridesmaid, never the bride, except with, you know, Katowice, which is a fantastic moment in the history of the game. But We'll always have Katowice.
Actually, their DreamHack Vegas post-game interview when they won DreamHack Vegas is probably one of the funniest fucking post-event interviews I've ever seen with the champions. That was the weirdest, oddest, funniest fucking interview I've seen.
But what? And then the Mercedes happened, right?
The Mercedes happened. Yep.
Yeah, and the rest is history. Yeah. So there you go. I guess we'll wrap it up there. That was, of course, another episode of Time Travel Land. We've still got two more quarterfinals to do. We're going to be bringing them to you. Remember, it will be Liquid 2019 Grand Slam Liquid versus 2016 Luminosity. I'm sure that'll be interesting and intriguing. And, of course, the 2021
Fallen. Versus Fallen, some could say. Steve
yeah,
it, Fallen, so.
Looking forward
to it.
You
don't know anything about that, right? No one here knows anything about that. So.
No, me either. Obviously 2021 Na'Vi versus the super team of FaZe. But for now, we're going to wrap it up. As always, thanks so much for watching, the few of you that do. We'll be back next time, probably. We will finish this, I promise. Bye.